This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, the topic is the Americans with Disabilities Act. We're going to refer to it as the ADA. Compliance requirements for small businesses. My guests are Bassam Altwalt, ADA certified access specialist and architect with office in San Francisco. Martin Orlick, ADA compliance attorney of San Francisco law firm of Jeffers Mangels. Regina Dick-Andrezzi, the director of the Office of Small Business, City and County of San Francisco, and Carol Kahn, director of Public Service Programs and the Lawyer Referral and Information Service, San Francisco Bar Association. Funding for this segment is made possible by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, by the Family Law Section of the State Bar, and by the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar. And welcome to the four of you. Carol, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
This is wonderful. And Bassam, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
This is modern electronics. That's what we're doing here. What we're going to do, everybody, is we're going to start with Marty Orlick talking a little bit about actually reviewing what the ADA is. And then we'll get into a lot of things. For those of you who are listening to the live program, and we do it live in the Bay Area, live on the Internet, and also it's now uplinked to the National Public Radio satellite. In the second half hour, I will give our toll-free number, and you can call in. I'm particularly interested in encouraging you, if you are someone who has a disability or if you're a small business owner, to take advantage of the fact that you can call in and talk with my guests. So, Marty, if you would, start with, if you would, just a simple review, if you would, of the primer on ADA.
Chuck, thank you very much for inviting me here tonight. It's my pleasure to talk to you and your audience. The Americans with Disabilities Act was enacted by Congress in 1990 as the most sweeping civil rights law that intended to provide full and equal access to persons with disabilities that this country has ever seen. There were a set of guidelines propounded in the early 1990s, and they've been modified in 2012. And the ADA involves both federal and state corollaries to anti-discrimination laws. The Americans with Disabilities Act is it consists of five parts. We'll be talking about one to three of those parts. The first is Title I, which is employment. The second is Title II, which applies to city governments and state governments. And the third aspect of the title, the ADA, is Title III, which applies to public accommodations, mm-hmm. which are businesses that are open to and doing business with the general public. The Americans with Disabilities Act has received a lot of press attention of late, not so much for the courthouses and the restaurants and the bars and the banks and other public accommodations that are accessible, as much as for abuse in litigation of the Americans with Disabilities Act. There have been 25,000 ADA lawsuits filed in the federal courts since 2000.
25,000?
Correct.
Across the country?
Across the country. Mm-hmm. And nearly half of those lawsuits have been filed here in California. The other states where we see a high preponderance of ADA litigation is Florida, New York, Illinois, Texas. The reason that California seems to have become a hotbed of ADA litigation is because California, in addition to the federal law which allows injunctive relief or requiring businesses to remove accessibility barriers and legal fees and costs, California has the Unruh Civil Rights Act and the Disabled Persons Act, which both allow for minimum statutory damages. So the Unruh Act allows for $4,000 per minimum statutory damage per offense, which means every time that someone went to a business where barriers were involved, They're entitled to $4,000.
When you say barriers, what do you mean by that? Simply, what does that mean?
For architectural barriers,
okay,
such
so
as
it's hard to get into the place or problem parking or whatever.
Correct. And in addition to that, every time the person thought about going back to that location, they're entitled
to
recover.
That's another violation. Another $4,000.
Correct.
Okay. All right.
It's a deterrence effect. So in the ADA applies to new construction, to alterations to buildings, and also applies to buildings that have been in existence before 1990 when the ADA went into effect.
Okay.
There's no notice and cure provision or requirement, so that typically the first time a business learns that there are accessibility barriers is when they're served with a summons and complaint.
By a plaintiff's attorney.
Correct.
Okay.
And I'm not here to villainize anyone with a disability. I would say, however, that there are some plaintiffs' lawyers who have filed hundreds and thousands of lawsuits, many of them legitimate lawsuits, and others maybe what some courts have determined to be frivolous lawsuits.
I see. Let me do this, and I think all of you, we're going to try. This is an enormous area of the law. We're going to try to focus, though, on the responsibility of small businesses to comply with accessibility. Bassam, you are a certified access specialist. You're an architect. What comments do you have about the certified access program?
Well, the certified access program is a result of a new law in California that came out in 2008, Senate Bill 1608, and created the CASP, Certified Access Specialist, which actually the beneficial, it strikes a balance between the local codes and the federal codes, because we had for a long time some differences between the federal and the state, and following one might not mean that you have been following the other, which created a confusion. And so the CAPS person would know exactly what codes to apply to your building, and depending on the age of the construction of the building. Prior to the ADA laws of 1990, effective 1992, or after that. So, but the most important thing that with the new, there's another in 2012, another state bill came out, 1186, that actually reduced the amount of damages a plaintiff could ask for on the UNRWA Act from $4,000 to $2,000 or $1,000, depends on the situation, if you hire a CAS and get your building certified within a certain amount of time. Actually, hiring a CAS prior to a lawsuit
Bassam, let me interrupt you because I want to make sure people understand when you're talking about CASP. What does CASP stand for?
CASP is a Certified Access Specialist.
Okay, good. Go ahead.
So a Certified Access Specialist, it's commonly known as a CASP right now. Hiring him prior to a lawsuit and following the instruction and the survey, and there's certain items by the code, by the law that needs to be followed, like a schedule of fixing your location, a business could be qualified to be called as a qualified defendant, which allows them to reduce an amount of damages. And in reality, if somebody if somebody hires a CAS and take care of their business and take care of their barriers, you will not be sued. And the last thing I want to add, that the CAS, through the law of California, can issue through the Department of State Architects a certificate of compliance that you could post on your window of your store telling people, hey, I've been certified and I'm good and I'm done, so move on, basically. That's in essence a small review of what a CAS program is.
Bassam, tell us, because I think this is very important for the audience and especially small business persons to know, how does a small business person find a CASP, in other words, a Certified Access Specialist? What is there a website someone can go to?
Yes, the website of the Department of State Architect, there is something called a list of certified access specialists. It's a DSA, and it's the Department of State Architect. Locally, you could go even to the Office of Small Business in San Francisco, mm-hmm. and they have a list of local CAS people who act in San Francisco. And just typing on the internet a list of certified access specialists, you will get directly to that list. And the list is organized with area code phone numbers.
I see.
Just by following the area code, you will know which CAS could serve your area.
Okay. If someone were to Google certified access specialist, would they be able to find this particular information or start finding it?
Yes, immediately. Okay. It will be on the top of the page.
Carol, you are the director of public service programs and also the lawyer referral and information service for the San Francisco Bar Association. You have been very active. The San Francisco Bar, I want everyone to know, is one of the funders of your legal rights and has been for a number of years. But you have been, Carol, you and the San Francisco Bar have been very active in trying to get information out to small business persons about the responsibility of them complying with the access requirements. Tell us what you think is important, especially from the standpoint of the lawyer referral program, which is part of the San Francisco Bar and, of course, is a part of all bar associations throughout California.
Thank you, Chuck. Yeah, so this is an issue that we really saw come forward in our community in San Francisco in a way that was really, unfortunately, pitting the person with disability in some ways against the business owner, and the business owner against the person with disability. And that kind of rupture in the community is not anything anyone wants to have. And to Marty's point, with respect to the litigation, when the American with Disabilities Act was created, there was not, at the same time, created an enforcement agency. In fact, the enforcement was to be handled through the courts. And so that's partly why, in fact, there is litigation, and it is there because there's still a lot of work to do. There's still a lot of accessibility to achieve, and education really becomes critical. And it's critical for the small business owner. It's critical for the community at large. And so we're all looking for the same desired outcome in our communities, which includes all persons, those who are permanently and temporarily disabled. And it's with that philosophy and objective in mind that the Lawyer Referral Service partnered with the San Francisco Office of Small Business and others back in 2011. We held a training. We have attorneys now through the program specifically in this arena, understanding what it means for a business to become accessible, get educated, compliance concerns, and so on. We ought, like many of the lawyer referral programs, the initial consultation is at a very modest fee of $35. But most importantly, we still maintain education for the business community around the ADA. It is our objective that one day, even in the old architectural city of San Francisco, that one day all persons can frequent any business in the city. So with that as our long-term goal, we continue to stay the course, continue to partner with Regina, who I'm so happy is on the program tonight, who's really put some wonderful, amazing things in place to make accessibility more a possibility for small business in the city. So, I just wanted to kind of give an overview a bit of our involvement and our continued involvement, and we will be involved for the long term.
Regina, let me turn to you. You are the director of the Office of Small Business for the City and County of San Francisco, and I know one of the things that you want to talk about is the fact that California, the state of California, now has a loan program to try to help small business. But what role does your office, the Office of Small Business for the City and County of San Francisco have with respect to the ADA?
Our role of our office, and thank you, Chuck, for having us and having me here tonight. We help advise businesses on what their requirements are. We do that through business consultation when businesses are coming to our office to open their business. And we also were a place for businesses to call when they got sued and really tried to understand what was required of them and why they got sued. In seeing that, the city developed some programs to do outreach and education. And as Carol said, we partnered with the Bar Association starting in 2011 with information, put together a loan program, but wanted to remind businesses and property owners that currently that there are federal tax credits and deductions that they can take annually, because there is an annual obligation to keep up with the accessibility requirements of one's space or one's building.
When you talk about tax credits, how does this work? So if someone is required to under the ADA is to do some reconstruction or remodeling or mm-hmm. whatever it is, and maybe has spent $10,000. Can you give us an example? I mean, that's could be a very small amount considering what might need to be done, but just as an example, is there a percentage of that would be the tax credit?
Well, a business is able to take up to a tax credit up to $5,000.
I see. Per year.
Per year.
Okay.
Or a tax deduction of up to $15,000. And we do let businesses know that actually getting a certified CASP inspection, so the cost that they pay out to someone such as Bassam and having an expert come in and provide a report and working out the solutions is something that they can take as a tax credit or deduction. They can work that out with their federal taxes. So that is
what about state? Does it also apply to the state taxes?
The state, I don't think that there are any federal taxes or deductions at the state level, but there is a federal.
Okay.
Just recently, the state did, though, enact a loan program to help incentivize property owners and small businesses to do the accessibility work that they may not necessarily have the cash to do. And so Governor Brown signed this into law in October.
Of last year.
Of 2015, mm-hmm. Eligible starting January. And the state entity that manages the loan program is the California Capital Access Loan Program, or CalCAP. And you can find that on the, if you just type that in, it's through the state treasurer's office. And it is a loan up to $10,250
per year.
Loan. But I do think the one requirement is that you're not in litigation.
You're not in litigation already.
Right.
Okay.
So,
hey, Chuck.
Yes.
Sorry, I wanted to add one thing to Regina, just for your listeners to know that the tax code is called Tax Code 44.
Tax Code 44. Is that the federal tax code?
Yes.
That's the credit, mm-hmm. yes.
Okay, that's for the credit. All right. Okay.
And it pays 50% of what you spend up to $5,000.
I got you. 50% of what you spend up to $5,000. All right. Terrific.
Yes. Section 190 of the Internal Revenue Code. Section 190 of the Internal Revenue Code is the tax deduction.
Okay. All right. And that tax deduction, as Regina had said, can go up to what? You said $15,000?
Yes.
I believe?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So go ahead. We cut you off, Regina.
Well,
go ahead.
I just, you know, want to make sure that our listeners know that these are programs both at the federal and at the state level to utilize. And again, the loan program, along with the tax credits and deductions, are really there to help the business and the property owner deal with their tenant improvements that they need to do for compliance. And as I said, it really dovetails well with the CASP inspection and report that a certified access specialist provides. And I highly encourage businesses and property owners to do the certified access specialist, have an access specialist, because then you know the advice that you're getting is the correct advice on the accessibility improvements that you need to make.
Let me turn to you, Marty, back if you would. One of the things that we talked about before we went on the air is that the ADA, the landscape is changing. And now there is apparently a focus on cyber accessibility. Could you take two or three minutes to talk about that and the concern that you have, since primarily you represent businesses, but tell us what's going on.
For the past 10 to 15 years, ADA litigation has focused almost exclusively on architectural barriers, such as inaccessible parking, inaccessible entrances to buildings.
You mean the white lines for the parking spaces are not properly spaced?
Or they don't exist.
Or they don't. Oh, yeah.
Or they're worn out.
Yeah.
The signage is missing.
Yeah.
Or the doors to the bench entrance to a restaurant is too heavy to open.
Yeah.
Teller counter in a bank or in a hotel is too high. So the issues have focused on architectural barriers. What I've seen in the last 12 months and more. More specifically in the last 4 to 6 months, is a growing trend of litigation focusing on whether or not websites are accessible to people who are blind or of low vision.
Mm-hmm.
This is a fairly new phenomenon. The Department of Justice has been working for some years to develop a set of criteria.
You're talking about the federal department?
Correct.
Okay.
The Federal Department of Justice has been working on criteria to make websites accessible to people who are blind using screen reader software. And the screen reader software would help someone who is blind or of low vision to click on a website, open the website, and then navigate through the website. So if it's a hotel, for example, and someone who is visually impaired wanted to make a reservation or to find out room availability or rates, they would be able to navigate the screen using
through the screen reader software.
Correct. And there are protocols that some plaintiffs' law firms are using now to test websites for accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
And those protocols are flawed in many respects. They are not 100% accurate, but they do give you some indication of whether or not there are gaps in the website, so that someone who's disabled will come to a point in the website and be unable to move
to
past
to
that.
Go further. That's
correct.
And that's the problem. That's a potential ADA problem. Is that right?
Correct, because while these standards are not the law at this point in time, they're still being developed,
mm-hmm.
And the Federal Department of Justice is considering implementing them in the next year or so, there is a requirement that businesses effectively communicate with their customers.
Yeah, of course. Bassam, we are nearly at the end of the statewide version, the first half hour of the program. We for those people who are listening to the program live, whether it's in the San Francisco Bay Area, whether it's on the internet at www.kalw.org, or listening to the program via the National Public Radio satellite, let me ask you this, Bassam. We have about 3 minutes left in the statewide version. Have you been involved yet with cyber accessibility? Have you been called upon to do an audit with that in mind, as Marty was just talking about?
Only once, and just that was in the last month or so. And it's not because of litigation. It's because of a new company who is launching a website, and they wanted to make sure that the website they are launching complies to the codes and regulations that are coming specifically under the Communication Act 255. But not as much as the lawsuits based on Title III of the physical barriers of the buildings. Those are still the majority part of the lawsuits that we're seeing out there.
Marty, with regard to this cyber accessibility, do you see that this is going to be a growing lawsuit filing type of situation?
I think we're just beginning to see the advent of this litigation. There have been a few cases around the country, but not like we're seeing now.
Really? Okay.
And I'd like to just jump in to say,
please, Carol. Yes.
Obviously, one doesn't necessarily need to be reactive to litigation. One can be proactive, and I think it's helpful for the listeners to know that there are estimates as high as $220 billion in discretionary income that persons with disabilities have as a group, as a potential market, and that in fact, when you open your business and it becomes accessible, or your website is one that can be accessible, that opens not only the door, figuratively and literally, to the person with a disability who needs that access, but to their friends and their families and so on. And I just put that back out there because I think sometimes there's this posture, oh gosh, it's just going to be too much money to look into this or whatever, I'll just risk it. See if I get sued. Well, then you get sued, and it's, of course, you're in a reactive position at that point and much more costly.
We have just a few seconds left in the statewide version, and for those of you who, and I've mentioned this before, who are listening to us live, we will continue for an additional half hour where you can call in and ask questions and make comments if you would. In the remaining half minute of the statewide version, Any final comments from you, Marty, please?
Yes, I think that accessibility is the law. It's something that everyone is required to do, whether you have a new business or a new building or an older building. You have an ongoing obligation to bring it into compliance to the best you can.
All right. I want to encourage you all, if you are a small business owner, if you are someone who has a disability and you are having a problem of getting into or out of a business or a private parking lot or whatever it may be that obviously has some aspect of business to it. It could be an apartment building, I presume. It could be a whole bunch of different things. Our toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. Please don't be hesitant. Give us a call. We want to make sure that you have an opportunity to pose your question, make your comment, make your concern available to my guests. And before I let you know who they are again, I want to let you know that support for KOW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, and I mention that because the San Mateo County Bar Association is also a funder of this program, it has a lawyer referral service program also, and you can call your own 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. I think you'll find in calling your local county lawyer referral service that you're going to get a live human being, believe it or not, at least I hope so, to talk with, and tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone for you, an attorney who's experienced in the area that you're having the problem with. And I'm not just talking about ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. I'm talking about all kinds of, let's say, legal issues that may confront you. They'll set you up for a half an hour consultation, and with rare exception throughout the state of California, a half an hour consultation will cost you $25 to $35. That money does not go to the attorney. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep it going. And that's a great public service. I hope you don't have to use it, but it's available to you. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing, if you tune in a little bit late, we're doing a program on the Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, and the compliance requirements for small businesses. My guests are Carol Kahn, Director of Public Service Programs in the Lawyer Referral and Information Service for the San Francisco Bar, Regina DiCandrezzi, the Director of the Office of Small Business for the City and County of San Francisco, Martin Orlick, ADA Compliance Attorney of the San Francisco law firm of Jeffers Mangels, and Bassam Altwal, ADA Certified Access Specialist and Architect with his office in San Francisco. So take advantage of the fact that you can call in. The number at toll-free is 866-798-8255. And we're going to start with Dave. Dave, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Chuck.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. We have a couple of situations here. First of all, let me do one point of explanation, which I think is missing here. I am a blind computer user, as is my life partner, Pam. We're quite good at it, actually. And what has not been mentioned is the reason why accessibility is an issue, and that is that screen reader technology, which we both are quite versed in, requires primarily the use of the keyboard rather than the mouse. We don't use the mouse at all. And so our navigation of a web page is necessitates using the tab key as the mouse pointer, if you will, and the space bar and the enter key as the click mechanism. That is the crux. And when a website becomes so visual that, and there are no labels for the screen reader to stop on or to see, then that's where the problem comes in. I'm having that experience right now with a credit card company that I use, and they have, and quite rightly so, have loudly proclaimed their accessibility, and until a couple of months ago, they absolutely were. I've used them for 20 years, but they have made changes to their website, and all of a sudden, I can't log in. I can't put in my username and password to go on with the site. This is the kind of thing that is going to become more prevalent as the websites become more glitzy and more picture oriented. They are going to become less accessible.
Dave,
I'm definitely anti-lawsuit. I don't want to sue anybody for anything. I just want my access.
Dave, let me interrupt you for just a moment and ask you this. With regard to your credit card company that obviously you've probably been with for a number of years, have you communicated with them? Have you called them on the phone and
said,
hey, I can't get into you?
I have.
And what did they tell you they're doing, if anything?
They've taken it under advisement.
Oh, that's wonderful. Is that what they said to you? We'll take this under advisement. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right, let me get some comments for you, Dave.
Can I say something?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
This is Bassam. This is completely understandable, Dave, and when the court came out regarding communication via website, it came out in 2008, and between 2008 and now, I mean, the technology, you just can't catch up with it. Uh-huh. And that's what Marty just said earlier. They're trying to come out with a new code to just keep up and improve on all these technologies, and actually have a set of regulations specifically addressing all these issues instead of keeping it vague as it was before. So they are working on it right now, as to my knowledge.
Okay. Now, if you'd like, Dave, is there anything else you want to say, or do you want to turn your radio back up?
One other question I have, and this is regarding, in general, regarding my partner. We bank at a particular bank, and in this particular case, a parking block was placed in a inappropriate place in the parking lot, to where she fell over it, accessing the ATM machine right near the walkout. The reason the parking block was placed there was to prevent cars from running into the ATM machine. Well, that's fine, but it also, if you happen to be trying to access the machine from a car, you have to either step across the parking lot or fall over it. What we'd like to know, we don't want to sue anybody. We just want this taken care of.
Sure.
How do we start?
All right, very good. Turn your radio back up. Dave, thank you for your fine questions and your points. I think they're just excellent. Marty, let me ask you to respond, would you?
Sure. Dave, I recognize the concerns that you and your wife have. Those are the issues that many companies face. Websites are not static. If you have a teller line in a bank, that's static. You can figure out what the height of the teller line needs to be. I had a situation where one of my clients had a day trader who was blind and traded on a regular basis, and then the website was altered. They came out, what they thought they did was they enhanced the website. As a consequence of that, the customer was no longer able to access the website, much as you and your wife have found. Once websites are altered, then they change to the point where you can't necessarily use them unless someone has consciously and deliberately taken accessibility into account. And so I think the important point here to understand is to bring a website into compliance with the WCAG 2.0 AA success criteria is important, but if it's a hotel and the rates change every day, then the website is changing every day, and you have to keep it up, and that's a problem. And as far as the wheel stop, it seems like it was a wheel stop that your wife may have encountered. There are requirements, there are code requirements for items that are obstructions, and if it's on the ground, it wouldn't necessarily be an obstruction, but it is certainly a potential trip hazard.
Well, it sounds to me it's like one of these things when you go into a private parking lot and there is a cement block so you don't have your car go into the wall or something like that. It sounds like there's a block like that.
A wheel stop.
But it's a wheel stop, yes. But it seems to me that certainly there should be some kind of a warning, either some kind of a structure that is above the wheel stop so that someone who is blind would not bump into it or not trip over it and get hurt. What comments do you have about
Chuck,
that? Yeah. Oh. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, Bassam, go ahead.
I want to say there are some codes about where and how to place those wheel stops. So if there is what we call an exterior path of travel and that leads to that ATM machine from the parking area, and there should be one, there shouldn't be any obstruction that could be a tripping hazard. Even the ATM machine should have a clear space in front of it so people would be able to use it. So it might be just a simple bad design, and I suggest for Dave, if you contact the retailer or the bank and just inform them about your issue, I'm sure they will hire somebody to go take a look at it, survey it, and maybe correct it.
Dave, I hope you will do that because, frankly, I hope your partner has not been badly injured by this fall, although I suspect it has not been pleasant at all. Marty, do you have any other comments for Dave about at least the wheel stop and his partner falling over this?
I'm having a little bit of a difficult time understanding it because if a wheel stop is on the ground, it should be cane detectable. Or if someone is walking with a service animal, the service animal will guide the handler away from the wheel stop.
Yeah.
Wheel stops shouldn't be placed anywhere except in front of a parked car.
Well, you would think so.
Yeah.
You would hope so. would hope so.
Right.
Here's a question that's coming. By the way, you're all pretty quiet out there. I understood that, I guess, that there's a major baseball game and then there's a basketball game. And for the five of you who are listening to the program, I hope you're enjoying us. In any event, here's a question. Would online news, papers that have no audio component and are not accessible to the blind and sight impaired, be liable under the ADA? Marty?
They could very well be. In certain jurisdictions, it could be. The fact that it is not broadcast audibly,
yes.
That doesn't change things. It would if it was a monitor in a bank, for example. Then if there's an audio component, then you would have to have a screen reader. Closed captioning. Mm-hmm. But if no audio is being broadcast from that monitor, then you don't need closed captioning. But someone who is blind would not have the ability to access that information.
So
this might be a good moment also.
Go ahead, Carol. Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in and introduce that, and Marty and Bassam can both speak to this with more detail, but there is this understanding in the ADA about what barriers to accessibility are removable with fairly little, with little expense and little, not as much work. And that's a concept called readily achievable. And so, for example, if there was something blocking the pathway to the ATM, or once you got inside the restaurant in your wheelchair, you were unable to navigate to the bathroom, and it's because an employee put a table in such a way that the pathway, in fact, was narrowed as opposed to being the expanded or the width that it needs to be for a wheelchair to, a pathway, then these two are matters that employers need to be aware of, business owners need to be aware of, that there are many accessibility issues that can be remedied quickly and easily and with proper training with employees, may not result in a problem so long as they're taken care of. And Marty and Bassam, I think you have some examples possibly.
Bassam, do you have some comments on that?
I hardly managed to hear Carol, but I heard the word readily achievable.
Yes, yes.
And the word readily achievable is actually, there's two standards. There's the word readily achievable and then the safe haven. The readily achievable applies to older buildings that had been constructed prior to 1992. So if that building is existing and before the laws came out, then you have to try to do the readily achievable as much as you can, as best as you can, to bring it up to compliance and within your financial capacity as well. So if you financially cannot do something, then you bring it to the next level where you can. But if the building was built after 1992, then readily achievable would not apply, and what would apply to you are the accessibility codes of the time. And if you have met those accessibility codes, then you are completely fine, and the ongoing obligation does not apply to you because you met the accessibility codes of the time. So it's a tricky situation, it's a tricky balance, depends a lot on the financial situation and depends on the construction difficulty or infeasibility of the construction to be able to execute that repair. But you still have to provide alternative solutions. For example, if somebody cannot fix the step on their store and people can't go to their store, then you could provide what is called a curb service. It put a sign on the bazaar and will come to you to the curb and letting you order that sandwich and bring it up to you to the curb so you could take it to go. So there are some situations, but it all depends on situation by situation.
Let me, Marty, pose a question to you. What concerns me here, Bassam has talked about that the financial ability of someone, of a business owner, to do this. If you've got something that's a real problem, which presents non-accessibility of someone who has a disability, if you can't financially afford to repair it, that is not an excuse under the law, is it?
Well, it is in part, but you have to do whatever you can to provide an equivalent facilitation. In other words, you can't simply say, I don't have the money, so I don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Many years ago, in the early 90s, I was representing one of the largest banks in the country, and the question came to me that the bank had thousands of branches around the country that existed prior to the ADA, and they wanted to understand this concept of what is readily achievable. And I explained to them that they're a publicly traded company. Unless the building is going to collapse or there's something structurally infeasible about it, everything is readily achievable.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, to Bassam's point, what is readily achievable is determined on a case-by-case basis. So the Bank of Marty Orlich may not be able to spend $1 million.
I thought it would. I thought the Bank of Marty Orlich would. What do you mean here?
but any nationally traded, publicly traded bank can afford to remove the barriers. So you have to do what you can, and you have an ongoing obligation to continue to review your financial condition. And as you may or become more profitable, then you can take further steps.
The concern I have, though, is if financially you do what you can afford to do to improve the situation, but it still doesn't make this easily accessible. With the litigation that has been going on over the years of plaintiff's attorneys looking for these kinds of situations to file lawsuits on, how does a small business dealer, a small business owner deal with something like that, facing a potential lawsuit?
The answer is the fact that you can't afford to do it is not going to immune you from a lawsuit. We saw on Channel 7 the other night the owner of a Valero station in the East Bay was sued because his parking lot was not compliant. The parking striping was not compliant. So the individual owner of the business said, well, fine, I'll go out there and I'll hire someone. We'll come in. We'll make sure that the parking lot is properly striped.
We'll repaint the lines.
Exactly.
Is that right? Okay.
And we'll put up the signs, and we'll spend $2,000 to do all of that. And plaintiff's counsel said, but we want $25,000 from you in order to settle this lawsuit. Now, will they settle for less than $25,000? Yes. But they're counting on companies not either understanding that small businesses, particularly small minority businesses in particular, not understanding the law or not having the wherewithal to fight these cases.
Yeah, you got to be what you're saying is you have to be proactive.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yes, Regina, please.
Regina. So, yes, and in San Francisco, we're really encouraging our small business owners to be proactive, and we're providing subsidized CASP inspections. So we're actually paying for the business.
This is the city and county of San Francisco. Not the state of California.
Not the state of California, but in the city and county of San Francisco, we are paying for small businesses to get a certified access inspection and report, and that helps them to be able to navigate this sort of nuance of what is readily achievable and what is not readily achievable, and needing to take a look at that in relationship to their lease, right? And because we are seeing many small businesses, because of the commercial climate out there, they're having short-term leases.
Okay, I see. I'm sorry, I didn't know who was talking. Was that
this
you, Carol?
Bassam.
Oh, Bassam, go ahead.
Regina's program is extremely successful, and I've been part of it, and they hire me often to go present services for the small businesses. But I want to add one other thing on the financial, just to clarify more. It depends on the financial strength of the mother company or of the corporate company that owns an entity. So it's not just of the local entity, but who even is behind it. So it is a complicated situation, as Marty said.
So if someone has a small business and you're saying is leasing or renting the small business, let's say for a restaurant, and the small business owner cannot make as good a repair as is necessary for good accessibility, are you saying the owner of the building has that responsibility?
No. Maybe, but not this. I'm saying if that restaurant, small restaurant, is owned by a corporate that owns 600 restaurants,
sure,
and the corporate that owns 600 restaurants is owned by another corporate in Wall Street, then the readily achievable is you have to do everything, as Marty said.
Okay.
Bank of Marty cannot not do it.
But the point you just made, Chuck, is If a small business doesn't have the money to do the work that's going to cost $50,000, let's say, to redo a bathroom, the landlord's responsible for that as well. The Congress, when they passed the ADA, recognized that small businesses wouldn't be able to afford to perform expensive repairs. And then the landlord would say, well, I leased the space out, so I no longer have any responsibility.
I have no control.
That's right. Congress said, no, that's not correct. Mm-hmm. Both you as the landlord and the tenant have responsibility jointly and severally. In other words, you're both responsible to the person with a disability to make those repairs. So if the tenant can't afford to do it, you, landlord, will get sued, and you'll be the one required to do
it. And you're talking about federal law now, are you not? I mean, this is not just unique to California.
That's correct. Yeah. This is a national issue.
Yeah, this is a national issue. And so all of you out there, if you're listening, we've got a lot of people now who want to talk to you. All right, Henry, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you very much. Regina, how are you?
Hello, Henry. How are you? Good to hear your voice.
Likewise. Great show. You did a good job there, Regina. Okay, couple quick questions. There's a hardship exemption.
Yes.
Below a certain dollar value, I think it was $137,000 or something, I forget right now.
Wait a minute. I want to have Marty comment on that. What's Henry talking about here?
What Henry is talking about is as if it's a variance, that you can go to the building department that has jurisdiction over the building and you can explain the circumstances, such as you can't afford to do it or your project is only $100,000, you can't afford to put another $50,000 into the accessibility path of travel, for example. And so you can qualify for a variance or a hardship declaration from the city, but it really needs to be a legitimate hardship declaration.
Well, sure. Sure.
Yeah, so my question is, though, that it's not so much what you can afford, it's the cost, the value of the project. Mm-hmm. Once you're over that limit, then you have to make it fully compliant. So my question is, can you get sued then? If the city gives you a 20% hardship, can you get sued? That's one question. The next one is, with a CASP inspection. If you get a CASP inspection, you're not necessarily fully compliant. Under, you know, the eyes of the ADA. Again, can you be sued in that case too? So those are the two. One, can you be sued if you have your 20% hardship from the city? You got a permit, all legitimate, but you're not fully compliant because of the 20% hardship exemption. Second, if you have a CASP inspection, again, you're not fully compliant, but you have certain things like your push buttons to open the doors and all that sort of stuff.
Can you get me sued?
All right, let me get some comments for you. Was that you, Carol?
Bassam.
I can take
Bassam. Pardon me. Go ahead.
The answer, I think, and Marty could confirm all that, the answer to the first question is yes, you can be sued because the 20% you're talking about, it's a code issue and the lawsuit is a federal issue.
Mm.
But the answer for the second, the CASP inspection, there is two classifications of the CASP inspection. One of them, if you are inspected and you get a classification CASP inspected, means that you have been inspected but you are not compliant and you have to work on your compliance because the CASP would issue you a schedule. It's required to issue you a schedule of compliance. But if you've been inspected and got a classification of meets current code and regulations, that means that you have no barriers. That means that you will not be sued because you have no barriers. So the best defense against a lawsuit is to proactively be compliant.
Let me get some comments from you, Marty, on that.
I've defended over 500 ADA lawsuits, and I've handled a number of them where the property was CASP certified and the barriers were removed according to the CASP certification. Many of the plaintiff's lawyers that I deal with couldn't care less. And it's an expensive proposition, Henry, to prove that you have a hardship declaration and whether or not it was a legitimate hardship declaration. And secondly, whether or not you have CASP certification. And even if you have CASP certification where you can reduce your exposure from $4,000 per offense to $1,000 per offense, there's a carve-out in the statute that says if the barriers were intentionally placed then or not removed, then the $4,000 exemption, the reduction to $1,000 doesn't apply. So anyone who can afford $600 or take a pauper's oath can sue you.
That's very interesting. All right, let's talk with, I think, Pam, you're going to be the last person. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, goodness, I will try to make this. I just wanted to...
Slow down. Pam, slow down a little bit. Don't talk too fast. Come on.
All right. I am Dave's partner, and I wanted to say that particular, when I fell over that parking block at the bank in Visalia, a couple of people came running out from their car and said, that wasn't there last week. I am pretty good, and I've gotten more conscious of making sure that my cane arc is wide enough. But I got out of the parking lot, and I thought I was home free, and then this thing was right in front of the place where you go to walk up.
Yeah, that's
and
dangerous.
Again, the reason given was to keep them from running in, was keep cars from running into a fence. And I just thought, you know, and these, this other couple said this wasn't there last week. This was a sudden inclusion. And I'm wondering, should I call the bank? I called the bank, and I haven't the corporate offices. I even called the president's office because we were working on accessibility. Haven't heard a word. Now, should I call the county and see who owns that property? What should I do?
What county are you in, Pam?
Tulare.
Okay.
Visalia.
Yeah, okay. How badly were you injured?
That's a hard one because I have fallen a number of times over my life, which is why I have been very careful of these sorts of things. And I can't say, I fell on my right side, and I can't say that this was or was not the last straw to do in the top muscle of my right rotator cuff.
Oh, boy. Let me get some comments for you on this. We are nearly out of time.
Yeah, I realize, and I thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Here's the final thing, if you would, in terms of trying to respond to Pam and also the following. What resources, websites, or public interest law firms are available to help with ADA compliance at housing locations, elevators, et cetera? Any comments on this?
Yes.
Go ahead, Bassam, please.
You could, the resources, actually, there is two resources, the Access Board and the Department of Justice. They have a phone number if you go to their website.
You're talking about the Federal Department of Justice?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
And you could go to their website and call that number and ask them any questions regarding accessibility that you have. And they will be very helpful to answer your question. And plus, our Department of State Architect, they have the list of the CASP people, and that is another resource. As for the legal questions, I'm going to leave that to Marty because I am no lawyer.
I'm terribly sorry to tell you, we are out of time, and I'm sorry to tell you that that's the case. I want to thank the four of you for being on the program, Bassam Altwal, certified access specialist, Martin Orlick, ADA compliance attorney, Regina Dick Andrezzi, director of the Office of Small Business, City and County of San Francisco, and Carol Kahn, director of public service programs, the Lawyer Referral and Information Service San Francisco Bar. For those of you who are thinking about problems, if you don't mind, Regina, I think you could call the Office of Small Business and get some referrals. You can call Lawyer Referral Service, whether it's the San Francisco Bar or your local Bar Association, County Bar Association, and maybe get some direction. I think that's the thing to do. Next week, I want to let you know what we're doing. It's when you turn 18. I hope you all are 18 or that young. Juveniles and the Juvenile Justice System. My guest will be Judge Eugene Hyman. Richard Halpern, Managing Attorney for the Juvenile Division of San Mateo County's Private Defender Program, and James Wade, Deputy District Attorney in charge of the Juvenile Unit of the San Mateo County District Attorney's Office. Your Legal Rights production staff members are Program Engineer Joanne Marr and Production Assistant Martin McClain. Funding for this segment has been made possible by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Additional funding has been provided by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of the program. Thanks all. Thanks very much for joining us on Your Legal Rights. Join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.